When one becomes a major party candidate for President of the United States, personal protection increases, thanks to the guarding arms of the United States Secret Service. But it's not only the guys and gals with earpieces that provide a barrier between Barack and the body politic, or McCain and the masses. It's also the written word. Here's what I mean. Those of us who are simple commoners rely on regular old criminal law to protect us. There are statutes on the books, of course, making it a crime to kill us or to batter us or even to put the fear of battery into us. Each state has its own criminal law, and we walk around daily with this barrier of protection, as penetrable as it may be sometimes. But candidates for president have an extra layer of statutory shielding. The federal law makes it a crime to harm or to threaten to harm certain special people, those who've achieved or are struggling to achieve some political prominence. One statute provides that whoever kills, kidnaps, or attempts to kill or kidnap any person who is a member of Congress or a member of Congress-elect, a member of the executive branch of the government who is the head of a department, a major presidential or vice presidential candidate, or a Supreme Court justice or nominee can be sent to prison for life. Another statute sends people to prison for up to 5 years when they threaten to kill, kidnap, or inflict bodily harm against a major candidate for the office of president or vice president, or those candidates' family members, among other key politicians. Those statutes have been used to punish those who spit on a United States senator, those who threw eggs at presidential candidate John Anderson, and those who threatened Ronald Reagan well past his presidency. Now, you might wonder why this is, why Congress felt it important to provide this extra layer of security, however false it may be at times. It's not like the criminal law that protects each of us would evaporate once we threw our names into the hat as candidates for high political office. Congress explained in legislative history that sometimes state laws weren't enough, that state laws sometimes didn't adequately support Secret Service investigations and prosecutions. Nonetheless, there are those who've argued that such a distinction between the presidential hopeful haves and commoner have-nots, for example, violates the constitutional right to, no pun intended, equal protection. The Constitution mandates that each of us be treated equally, unless there's some really good reason not to treat us equally. And here, courts have sided with Congress. The extension of special protection to members of Congress is highly rational, the court explained in one of the cases involving an egg assault on John Anderson when he was a presidential candidate. The protection should be such as to serve to impede potential violators from carrying out such attacks. In other words, it's rational to bump up protection for politicians who, as another court put it, occupy a unique position resulting from both their access to confidential information and their exposure to the public that makes them likely targets for potential kidnappers or assassins. So the Secret Service put up physical barriers of sorts at the Obama and the McCain homes, and Congress put up its own word-based barriers. Let's hope they both hold up. I'm Amy Guida.